Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us again this week. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. My guest today is Bob Zima. Bob is a licensed clinical counselor, and through his personal experience, he knows a little something about getting past addiction and getting past adversity, and he's going to share his thoughts with us today. Bob Zima, after this, on The Journey of Hope. Always catch me at MathersRodney at yahoo.com. That's MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Drop me a line. My guest today is Bob Zima. Bob is a licensed clinical counselor, and through his personal experience knows a little bit of something about addiction and adversity. He wrote a book called Toilet Therapy. It's about healing anger, and he's the producer of a healing video entitled Grief is Like a Vacuum, It Sucks. Great titles. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you, Rodney. Great to be with you.
Now, you have a podcast, too, don't you?
I do. It's called The Bob Zima Show.
Yeah. What kind of issues do you address on that?
Well, the very cleverly named Bob Zima Show addresses all sorts of different things. I try to use a lot of humor, a lot of comedy, to kind of look at the different things that people struggle with in life, right. The stressors that we may face. So, for example, today we were talking about being able to ask people for help. A very difficult thing for most of us to do, to reach out, ask for help, ask for support, because we want to be able to do it on our own. And I also talk about, as you mentioned in the opener, addiction issues, anger issues. We deal with grieving and healing in as healthy a way as possible. So a good mix of things.
And you have some personal experience with some of these issues, I understand. Why don't you give us, Bob, a little bit of your background so that we know where it is you're coming from on this?
No problem. I'll try to do this in a short and condensed amount of time. But generally, Rodney, I refer to myself as a frequent flyer to hell and back. I've been to hell and back so often I have frequent flyer miles. Mm-hmm. Some of the big milestones in my life is that 19 years ago I went to rehab, a 28-day program for drug and alcohol addiction.
Okay.
And have spent 19 years maintaining my sobriety, making that an important part of my life, trying to find new ways to cope. For me, picking up a drug or a drink is a manner in which I just coped with the BS of life, you know. It was the way that I would deal with stress, and it was very effective at first, but then became incredibly ineffective and incredibly unhealthy, so I got sober. In addition, I have lost every penny I ever earned. I was working in radio, television, and film, was making my way into the web world, was working for an organization that, you know, .com and then .went, and lost my job. 10 months later, lost my home, ended up homeless with a wife and two young children, and then I think probably the most significant loss in my life are the death of two young children. I've had two infant children die due to a congenital heart defect known as a truncus arteriosus.
And oh my gosh.
So those are just some of the biggies, the bullet points on the dust jacket of the books that you mm-hmm. mentioned. So
Man, I'm sorry to hear about that. But the good news here, if we could glean any good news from it, is that you have got some advice on how to get past that kind of adversity, and that's the kind of thing we're looking for on this show. For example, one of your big areas is dealing with anger.
Right.
School us up a little bit on some of your advice on how to deal with anger issues.
With anger, no problem. Anger to me is huge. What I see, anger and addiction are kind of the same things, you know, AA. But anger and addiction, Rodney, for me, are just ways people are trying to heal. People are trying to mend the wounds in their soul. They're trying to deal with the anxiety that they face in their daily life. And anger and addiction are two ways that people are trying to cope with those things, but they're ineffective and they're unhealthy. I take a bit of a departure from some of my other clinical colleagues in that I see anger as behavioral. We see someone yell, or we hear someone yell. We see someone fight, kicking, screaming, drinking, drugging, mm-hmm. the height of anger, homicide or suicide. So for me, anger is behavioral. It's the emotions of hurt and fear in motion. Mm-hmm. So anger is the sound that hurt and fear makes as it leaves our soul. So when we experience a really bad day, a really horrid week, an awful month, somebody cheats on us, we lose a loved one, we lose a job, we end up homeless, we get that medical diagnosis, it can drive unbelievable fear and also put a lot of pain in our soul. And that's incompatible with the soul. So we act out. We got to get rid of those things. And so that's what anger is for me. It's the behavioral response to being wounded and being afraid. The way I encourage people to start to heal from anger is first mm-hmm. just to be aware of it. Mm-hmm. Be mindful of the patterned ways that you become angry. Do you isolate? You know, are you sitting in your basement for 4 days in your underwear watching Netflix and eating Cheetos? So when you come above ground, you look like just a big Oompa Loompa. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're an isolator because you don't want to engage the world, you're fearful of it. Do you yell? Are you a grouse? Are you short with people? Are you somebody who has trouble driving in traffic without getting upset? But to become mindful of these behaviors, then the notion is, you know, what are the emotions that are really fueling that behavior? People think anger is emotional because they say, I feel angry. But what you're really feeling is the physiological response of your body to help you get ready for what's known as the fight, flight, or freeze syndrome. I'm sure a lot of people have heard that. So that when I'm at work and somebody's bullying me, I'm going to either run away from that bully or I'm going to take that bully on. Well, for me to be able to do that, to fight or to flight, my body has to be prepared. So my heart starts pumping faster. The blood runs to my extremities. My lung capacity increases. I start to sweat to cool my system. And people confuse these physiological responses to the threat as that's when I feel anger. But the anger really is the behavioral response. I punch that coworker, or I run very fast. Part of that behavioral response, Rodney, is getting rid of the emotion, the fear, the feeling intimidated, or the feeling wounded. The bully at work is mocking me or teasing me. And so I want to get rid of that toxic fear or that toxic hurt, and that comes out through my behavior. Mm-hmm. I also reduce the physiological sensations, that fight-flight response, through my behavior. The reality is all of that, Rodney, is driven by my thinking and my interpretation of the bully at work. If I think they think I'm a lowlife, that I'm stupid, that I'm dumb, it starts churning that hurt and that fear. It starts that fight-flight response, and that comes out through an anger behavior. But if I sit there and I think, you know, this guy's just a loser, you know? I mean, what, he thinks I'm dumb and stupid? Ha! No way! He doesn't know what he's talking about. If that's going on in my brain, in that miraculous 3 pounds of gray matter that sits above my neck, then my response is not going to be as impulsive. If I'm thinking, if I don't buy into what that bully's saying, if I disagree in my head, oh no, I'm smart, oh no, I'm valuable, then I'm not going to have those emotions. Mm-hmm. My body won't respond, and my behavior will be to just simply ignore the individual. So although anger is behavioral, fueled by emotions and physiological responses, it really all starts between the ears and the manner in which we interpret and take in the world. Now, on my website, bobzima.com, I have a free online webinar. It's not a webinar because you don't see my picture, but it's an audio seminar and an audio conference I gave back in July. And any of your listeners that are interested can go to bobzima.com, click on the Calm the Storm tab, and they will have access to not only my PowerPoint slides, but also a workbook, and then listen to the actual conference over their internet connection and learn about this process that I just talked about in the last few minutes.
Okay. Notion of ignoring, I guess that's one possible technique to keep yourself from getting into any trouble or anything, but I'm curious what you have to say about and what you would tell people about the appropriateness of being assertive as opposed to aggressive. Do you talk about that sort of thing, and is it okay to be assertive as long as you don't cross that line into being aggressive?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What you're talking about, Rodney, is a big trailer park, and we have assertive over here, and there's different kinds of trailers in the assertive side of the park, and then you kind of get into you cross the tracks, and you get into the kind of seedy area where there's violence and all sorts of stuff, and that's aggression. And at the end of the day, Rodney, we're all going to respond in a unique and different way, because we're all unique and different. We all have a different life story. We all have a different biology. We all have a different temperament. You and I could be at the same place, have the same employee tease and pick on us at two separate times. You may be assertive. I may be aggressive. So a lot of our response is going to be based on life story. It's going to be based on our current ability to cope and adapt and to be resilient in times of stress. At the end of the day, the difference between assertion and aggression is the person's decision. Did my response to that bully work? Mm-hmm. So if I stood up to the bully and said, you don't know what you're talking about, you're out of line, I'd appreciate it if you stopped, somebody might see that as assertive. On the other hand, somebody might see that as aggressive. Right. At the end of the day, assertive and aggressive are labels we attach to how effective did we evaluate our behavior to be. Did it work? Did it get us what we wanted? Did it help solve the problem? Mm-hmm. One of the things I do in my Calm the Storm Anger Healing seminars, or Calm the Storm Anger Healing, of course, is also the same material as you mentioned in my book, Toilet Therapy. The idea is to get people to discover ways that they can respond, to develop psychological fitness skills, to cope, to problem solve, and to respond in a way that is healthy and effective for them. For some folks, Rodney, simply walking away is assertive enough. For others, simply telling the bully you do not appreciate that behavior and you would appreciate it if they stopped, that's assertive. For others, pushing that bully, knocking them to the floor, is assertive. And you say, did going to jail and you losing your job work for you? And if they say, yeah, it worked for me, I have no problem with it, then that person doesn't have an issue. It's only when the anger response is ineffective, it's unhealthy, it doesn't help you get what you want, mm-hmm. that's the only time I really work with both clients or anybody who's ever been to my seminar or workshop or read my book, You identify what's not working, and then I try to help you modify that by going back through the system. So pushing the bully didn't work. Well, why did you push the bully? Well, because I was very hurt. Well, why? Because he teased me. Well, when that person teased you, it meant what? Well, it meant that I was stupid. But are you stupid? No. Well, then why didn't you think that? I don't know. Well, try that the next time.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does, and a good answer. I want to talk to you more about coping skills as it relates to addiction, but we need to take a quick break. We're talking with Bob Zima today. Bob's got some really cool information. He's got a cool book out there, and he's got a lot of stuff there on the internet for us to take a look at. So the book is called Toilet Therapy Healing Anger, and he's got a video called Grief is Like a Vacuum, It Sucks, which, man, can you get a better title than that? Take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, here on the Journey of Hope. One of my most favorite things in the world is to get an email from you to let me know how you're doing. You can always get me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com, mathersrodney @yahoo.com. Got an idea for a show? Got an idea for a guest? Let me know, and I'll check it out. mathersrodney@yahoo.com. Drop me a line. Guest today is Bob Zima. We're talking about anger, we're talking about addiction, we're talking about coping skills and impulse control. Bob, I wanted to ask you a little bit about coping skills as it relates to addiction. It's been my experience that people that have addiction issues don't cope with life's stress very well. They lean on the addiction instead of finding other ways to cope. And you've been sober for 19 years, you said. So can you tell us a little bit about what it took for you to get there to where you're not leaning on an addiction and you found other ways to cope, and what some of those other ways are?
Well, I can tell you, Rodney, that both clinically and professionally, I see an addiction. And that could be an addiction to drugs or alcohol, an addiction to Netflix, an addiction to being isolated, an addiction to Ben and Jerry. You know, we could be addicted to something. And an addiction is a behavioral response to a stressor. The manner in which we deal with sort of the BS of everyday life. And it's become ineffective. Okay? Because, you know, here's the thing. Why did I drink and drug? Because drugs and alcohol work. Drugs and alcohol took away the anxiety. Drugs and alcohol, you know, kind of quieted that pain. Mm-hmm. What didn't work isn't the drugs and alcohol. What didn't work for me was thanking a toilet for being cool and wet at 2 in the morning. Mm-hmm. What didn't work for me were the relationships that I was damaging because of my poor decision-making while I was intoxicated, or the jobs that I lost. The reason I went into addiction is my wife told me, you got to get sober or I'm leaving. And I said, hey, can I help you pack your bags? And I lost a job. I finally went into treatment because enough was enough. The drinking and the drugging, although incredibly efficient, although incredibly effective early on, it became unbelievably ineffective and unhealthy. Mm-hmm. It didn't work anymore for me. It's the same thing with anger. people go to anger management or go get sober, not necessarily because a judge, a wife, a boss says it. It's because they finally get to the point where they realize this ain't working anymore. And so when I went into rehab, I learned some basic skills. I learned some basic things on how I could deal with life without getting drunk, how I could deal with life without taking a drug. And once I realized that I needed to do that and that I chose to do that, things became a little easier. The problem with addiction, Rodney, is two things. Addiction recovery or sobriety is scorched earth. This is scorched earth mentality. You're giving up all of your support network because most of the people you hang out with, shoot pool with, throw darts with, go boating with, they all drink and drug. Not only that, you give up all of your leisure activities because everything you do revolves around drinking and drugging. Mm-hmm. So when you get into get sober, when you go to rehab, you're literally scorched earthing your entire life. You have to start over. And for most folks, they can put the drink and they can put the drug down. But it's when they lose that social support. It's when they lose that leisure activity. It's when they're home alone at 10 o'clock in the evening on a Friday, and they're not out with their friends. These are the things that become the real stressor. Mm-hmm. So for me, one of the most important things was recognizing that AA and other support groups could become my new social network, could mm-hmm. become my new support network. I also needed to start to develop things, develop hobbies, develop interests that had nothing to do with my drinking and drugging career. Oddly enough, I got into NASCAR and hockey, which if you've ever been to a NASCAR event or a hockey game, there's occasional alcohol sold there. And occasionally people at a NASCAR event will sit around and drink before, during, and after the race. But even though I got into those environments and those activities and with social support networks, that I was still able to engage in those things because they were new to me. I never associated hockey or NASCAR or various activities or various social groups with my drug of choice. And so I was able to build that social network, build that leisure time, and that is what really is the secret to me, in particular, staying sober, is leaning on a social community. And a lot of times for some folks, that's church, you know, because it's mm-hmm. all the roads that lead us to either drugs or Jesus, as Tim McGraw said. But I got involved in a church, and I met some people through AA, and then we started various activities together, and I found new hobbies and new interests that were not connected to my past drinking and drugging career. So in many ways, to gain and maintain sobriety, the addict or the alcoholic has to scorch earth everything. Mm-hmm. Most people are unsuccessful because it is so difficult to go that alone, and it takes a while to build that social network and get mm-hmm. those leisure activities to come back online.
Yeah, it's always surprising to me. It's not surprising to me, but when I see other people, the light bulb comes on after they've put some distance between themselves and an addiction, you know, a matter of months or maybe years, they begin to realize how much that beer or that whatever it was consuming their life, you know, and it just takes control. You don't realize. And, you know, it doesn't even have to be drugs. Cigarettes are that way, too. I've been talking with some people about quitting smoking, and people have that same kind of realization with cigarettes. When they get past it a ways, they say, my God, you know, I wake up in the morning and I think, okay, now do I have an extra pack? I mean, it was like the first thought that they had every day, you know. So people so people don't realize how much an addiction consumes their life. And so, yeah, what you're saying makes a lot of sense about just having to rebuild everything from scratch. And it's not easy, but it's definitely doable. Listen, what kind of feedback have you gotten over the book?
The toilet therapy book?
Yeah.
Most people usually kind of laugh at it. I mean, I call it a crapper companion guide. Because it's designed for people, say, you know, to be used in 10-minute increments, so to speak. You know? And it's built off of the theoretical model that I use, both rational emotive behavioral therapy with Albert Ellis, and then William Glasser's reality therapy, which are two well-known and respected theoretical orientations in the field of psychology. And what I really want to do is help people, you know, sort of begin to recognize patterns. It's like what you were just saying with cigarette smoking. Once you become mindful and aware that the first thing you do when your alarm goes off is you reach over to the end table and you grab your lighter and your cigarettes. I mean, I used to do that all the time. I wouldn't even think about, I would literally pour a cup of coffee and light up a cigarette and walk out onto the deck. I was doing it almost automatically. Mm-hmm. But once you begin to understand sort of these automatic patterns of behaviors, now you become aware of it. Now you can start to look at what's going on, what's happening in my life, and how am I interpreting that? How am I interpreting it, and how does that lead to the behavior? And that's really what I try to do in the radio show, in the book, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So the response from the book is most people laugh. Been a lot of positive response from the book. It's short, it's straightforward, it's simple. I may have a master's degree, but I'm just a down-to-earth kind of simple kind of guy. At the end of the day, too, it's really about a two-step process. First, you got to get your head out of your butt and become aware of what's not working in your life. And then the second piece is you got to get your butt off the couch. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of telling people what to do or you should do this or that there's only one way to heal. The only way to heal is your way, and the only way you're going to find your way is through trial and error. Mm-hmm. Become mindful and aware of what ain't working and why, and then try to solve the problem. Try some different things, and if it works, fantastic, do it again. But you have to tell yourself to do it again. You have to tell yourself to do it again because patterns take a while, even the healthy ones, for them to become consistent.
Okay. Where do we get the book, and where can we hear your podcast?
Okay, well, first of all, everything is located at bobzima.com. I keep a very simple website. So, for example, if you go to bobzima.com, you will see not only the Grief is Like a Vacuum, It Sucks video. There's a little trailer for that on my website. But you'll also see the Toilet Therapy book and a book that was published last week called Grief is Like Racing. So all of those are available at bobzima.com. The podcast is on Blog Talk Radio, and you can just Google Bob Zima, and you'll find not only the Blog Talk Radio, but the if you have Stitcher or TuneIn or Player FM or iTunes on your device, you can connect to the RSS or use that application to link to the podcast as well. So all of that information is at bobzima.com. As well as I mentioned before, that free workshop. If you're interested in starting to take a look at your anger, you can go right to the website. If you'd like a copy of the PowerPoints and the workbook itself, there's a little form you can fill out, and I'd be happy to email those off to you. And then the three audio segments of the workshop are available to listen online.
Bob Zima, what an excellent resource he is with the books, the video, and the show on Blog Talk Radio. Bob, I want to thank you so much for being here today.
No problem, Rodney. I appreciate you having me on, bud.
We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Remember, it's MathersRodney at yahoo.com, MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Man, I'd like to hear from you, so give me an email, okay? We'll be right back. come to the end of another show. I want to thank my special guest today, Bob Zima. Bob is just an excellent resource out there. You want to be sure and check out his podcast on Blog Talk Radio and the books that we've got posted here next to the podcast. Click on those links so you can get one of those. And thanks, Bob, for being here today. And I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on The Journey of Hope.